Okay, I want to speak about three topics from the Sedra and tie them all together. First, Torah tells us that before Matan Torah, Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ahar, since it says it in the singular and not in the plural, so it tells us they were Ki'ish Echad Belev Echad, like one person with one heart. So we normally think that that was a very nice thing, that before the Torah was given, they all were united, and it was a nice thing that for the sake of receiving the Torah, they had this great mila of unity. But the truth is that without that unity, the Torah couldn't have been given. It wasn't just a nice thing, it was a necessity. In fact, it says that Lo nitna Torah ela lahavi shalom la'olam. The whole purpose the Torah was given was to bring shalom to the world, right? As it says in the pasuk, Drachecha darchei Noam. Its ways are ways of pleasantness. V'chol nesivoseha shalom. All the pathways of Torah lead to shalom, and therefore people who learn Torah are talmidei chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. What's this idea? Shalom does not mean peace. Shalom means perfection, shlemus. Perfection is only reached when there is harmony and a group effort, things working together, many different things working together, because nothing in this world is perfect except the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu created many, many things. And perfection is reached when all those many things unite together and work together in harmony. And therefore, when it says that the Ribbono shel Olam makes shalom in the heavens, Osa shalom bimromav, what does that mean? So the rabbis say what it means is that in order to make heaven, to make shamayim, he took fire and water and combined them together to make heaven. So that is shalom. Shalom is where things, even opposites, even things that are very, very different, work together in harmony. Then there's Shamayim, then there's Gan Eden. And this is on all levels, right? When the world was created, each day HaKadosh Baruch Hu created various things, and he saw they were good. Vayar Elokim Kitov. On the sixth day, it says Vayar Elokim Es Kol Asher Asa V'Hinei Tov Ma'od. When he saw everything, it was very good. So the Sfarno asks, what transformed all these many good things into something very good? It should have been a lot of good things. Why now is it very good? Basically, what he says, I'll give you an example too. If you take an automobile and you break it down into its components, so you have now a horn over here and tires over here and spark plugs over here and a gas tank over there and seats over here. Each component is good, has a purpose. You could use the seats for furniture, use the gas tank for storage, you could use the spark plugs to light a fire, and so on and so on. But when you put them all together, and they work together to make a functioning automobile, the automobile is very good. It's better than the sum of its parts. So too says the Sfarno, each thing in creation was good in itself. But when it works together to form a functioning universe, then it's very good. The functioning universe is better than the sum of its parts. Same thing goes on the social level, right? If everybody would be doctors, we'd have a very healthy world, but who would take out the garbage? And if everybody would be garbage men, we'd have a very clean world, who would take care of the sick? So you need a world with all the different social occupations, people who do all various things, right? And that's how the world reaches perfection. And the same thing is on the spiritual level, right? We pride ourselves that we received the Torah with 613 mitzvahs. That's a fallacy. No one can ever perform 613 mitzvahs. Not because it's hard. It's impossible. Because certain mitzvahs are only for Kohanim. So if you're a Kohen, right, you'll tell me you have 613 mitzvahs. No. Because certain mitzvahs are only for Yisrael. A Kohen will never fulfill the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen as a father because he's exempt from that mitzvah. So if you're a Kohen, you have mitzvahs that no Yisrael has. If you're Yisrael or a Levi, you have mitzvahs that no Kohen has. So neither of them can have 613 mitzvahs. If you're a man, you have mitzvahs that no woman could ever do. But if you're a woman, you have mitzvahs that no man could ever do. At least in my lifetime, I'm hoping no man will ever bring the sacrifice after childbirth. Right? That is definitely a woman's mitzvah. So, who has tarig mitzvahs? Unless you are a Kohen, Levi, Israel, man and woman wrapped into one, which today may be possible, under normal circumstances was not, right? You can't have tarig mitzvahs. Now the answer is, we didn't accept the Torah as individuals. We accepted it as a conglomerate called Klal Yisrael, ke'ish echad b'lev echad, with one heart, like one person. And therefore, what's it called? It was impossible for the Torah to be received without that achdus, without that unity. Because if we accepted the Torah as individuals, we never could have accepted the whole Torah. No individual could accept the whole Torah. It's only Klal Yisrael as a klal that could possibly accept the entire Torah. And that's why it says, Ki ish echad b'lev echad. It should have said, Ish echad b'lev echad. One person with one heart. But we weren't one person. We were like one person, meaning we were very, very different people. But it's all those different people that work together, b'lev echad, in harmony, each one contributing his unique part, that made Klal Yisrael fit to get the Torah. So we weren't ish echad. We weren't mamish one monolithic type. We were ki ish echad. We were like one person. But meaning that we're all different kinds of people united together, b'lev echad, not kilev echad, not like one heart, but with one heart. In the heart, we were all connected to the same goal. Individually, people, everybody was only like one person, but everybody was different. And that's difference, and the unity of all these different components is what made the receiving of the Torah possible. I was thinking, that's the meaning of the following Medrash. The Medrash says that when there were lightning and thunder and all the earthquakes that accompanied the giving of the Torah, the nations of the world got scared. And they went to Bilam, who was the prophet of the nations of the world, to find out what was going on. So they said that they think God's bringing a flood to the world to destroy the world. So Bilam said, no, God promised he's not going to bring any flood. They said, well, that's a flood of water. Maybe it's a flood of fire that he's bringing now. Bilam said, no, God's not going to bring any flood of fire or flood of water. So they said, then why all this noise? What's going on? He said, God is giving the Torah to the Jewish people. So they said, Hashem oz lamo yitain. God is giving oz, the Torah, to his nation. Hashem yivarech esamo v'ashon. Let him bless his people with peace. And they left. I think the Medrash means the following. The nations of the world are not necessarily commanded to bring perfection to the world. They're just commanded not to destroy the world. And therefore they were concerned that God is going to destroy the world, that there's going to be another flood, right? And they're going to be responsible for destroying the world. So Bilam told them, no, the world's not going to be destroyed. If God is giving the Torah to the Jewish people, which will bring the world to perfection. So they said, fine, that's not our concern. Hashem oz lamo yitain. God, let God give that to the Jewish people. Hashem yivarech es amo v'ashalom. His nation are responsible to bring perfection to this world. We're just responsible not to destroy the world. Therefore, the Goyim have seven mitzvahs, which correspond to the 7 days of creation. They just have to be moral and make sure they don't destroy the world. But to bring perfection to the world, they don't have to. We, on the other hand, have to bring perfection to the world, which is represented by the eighth mitzvah. The beginning is Bris Milah, number eight. That Bris Milah is supposed to take the world as it is and perfect it. Bring it to perfection. So, therefore, the Jewish people have to be concerned about bringing perfection to the world, whereas the rest of the nations only have to be concerned about not destroying the world. And that is the whole idea of She'ila Shalom, of greeting people. Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom. On the one hand, the Maral says that somebody who initiates the greeting, Shalom Aleichem, is a tremendous sign of humility, and therefore he deserves tremendous bracha. And the person who doesn't respond, if somebody doesn't respond with Aleichem Shalom, then he's like a ganav. He's stealing from the other person. He's stealing what you can steal from a poor person. So what does that mean? Basically, what I think it means is the following. Shalom Aleichem means I can't do it on my own. Shalom, my perfection, my relationship with God depends on you. Shalom Aleichem. My shalom, my shleimus depends on you. I can't do it alone. I need your component also for my perfection. And therefore, it's a tremendous statement of humility that I need you. I can't do it on my own. That's humility. Now, the person who would answer, shalom aleichem, so it's like ping pong. No, my perfection depends on you. So it's like bantering it back and forth. So we don't say that. I accept the fact. You tell me shalom aleichem, I accept that. You're right. Your perfection depends on me. But aleichem shalom. But my perfection also depends on you. It's not throwing back what you said to me. It's accepting it and saying that it applies both ways. It's a two-way street. And therefore, if I don't respond, I've accepted the fact that you depend on me, but I don't admit that I depend on you. And therefore, I'm stealing from you your self-worth. I'm stealing from you the fact that I need you, right? I'm not admitting to that. So I'm stealing your dignity. What you can steal from a poor person. You can only steal his dignity. You can steal his self-worth by not admitting to it. So therefore, that we don't answer again, shalom aleichem, because you're just throwing it back. No, I depend on you. No, you depend on me. No, you're right. You do depend on me. But I also depend on you. We're mutually interrelated. So that is the first idea. That in order to receive the Torah, they had to be united, which implies that the perfection of the Torah can only be reached when every component, every individual works harmoniously with every other individual, and that is what's called achdus, that's what's called shalom. And the Torah is there to guide how to bring that shalom and that harmony to the world by giving each person their specific mitzvahs that they can contribute towards the perfection of everybody. That is how the Torah and those that learn Torah bring shalom and shleimus and perfection to the world. Next topic. We'll see they're connected. Right before the Torah was given, the Rebbeinu Shem told Moshe Rabbeinu to go down from Har Sinai and to warn the people again that they should not attempt to come up to Har Sinai, because if anybody attempts to come and approach the mountain, right, if he touches the mountain, he's going to be liable to a death penalty. So Moshe said, Lo yuchal ha'am, they can't come up. We warned them. We made a boundary around the mountain. The people can't come up. They've been warned. Why warn them again? It's not easy to keep going up and down this mountain. Right? It's not necessary. Yet the Rebbeinu Shem was adamant, go down and warn them. Why? Right? If it wasn't necessary, Moshe was right. They already made a boundary around the mountain. They already told the people that they're going to be liable to a death penalty if they come up. Why say it again? So I think a possibility could be the following. One way of the Rabbeinu Yonah in his Sefer Shari Avoda starts out with the following. He says the foundation of Torah, both the incentive to follow the positive side of the Torah and the incentive, the deterrent from doing the things that the Torah says you shouldn't do, is Hakaras Ma'alas Atzmo, a person knowing his own self-worth, his self-value, knowing what he is. Because if you don't think you're important and you don't realize how important a human being is, especially a Jew, then you have no incentive to serve God. Because why would God want a good-for-nothing serving him? What would it mean anything if the person wasn't important? And also, what deterrent would you have from doing bad things if you think you're good-for-nothing? Because good-for-nothing things do good-for-nothing things. In fact, the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva explains that after we say vidui, or shamnu, bogadnu, we say all these terrible things we did, we end off and say, Ovarnu amitzvosecho umishpotecho atovim, we've transgressed your good and just laws, velo shavalanu. Now the simple meaning lo shavalanu is that it wasn't worth it. Lo shaveh, wasn't worth it. We thought we'd gain all these things from it, and in the end, lo shavalanu, it didn't benefit us. But he says it means something else. Lo shavalanu means it was not befitting us. In Yiddish, nicht vor mir zugepasst. It's not befitting me. Meaning, if I really think that this is what I am capable of doing, right, and this is befitting me, then what am I confessing? That's me. That's what I am. But if I really know that I am much greater than that, and these things are out of character, they're not befitting me, then there's something to confess. So unless a person understands how important he is in God's eyes, and how important he is, then he's not going to have an incentive to do good or a deterrent from doing bad. And that is not gaiva. Knowing your own self-value and self-worth and self-importance is not haughtiness. There's a very basic difference, fundamental difference between haughtiness and knowing your self-worth. And it can be summed up in the following two sentences, I think. Haughtiness is, I'm important because I made myself important, and that gives me rights. And knowing your self-worth is, I'm important because God made me important, and that gives me responsibility. That's the difference. But if you don't appreciate how important you are, right, and especially like we said, everybody's important because perfection can only be reached when everybody contributes their unique part. So everybody is extremely important towards the whole. In addition, there's another aspect of this. And that is that one way of looking at the Torah is that the Torah is the instruction book for human life. Okay, when you buy a car, you get a thick book together with it that gives you instructions how to use the car properly. How to maintain it, what kind of gas to use, what kind of oil to use, what kind of detergent to use on the seats. Why? It's your car. Do whatever you want with it. Why do they give you an instruction book, right, an owner's manual? The answer is because you didn't design the car. Somebody else designed it. And you are bound to the design of the designer. Same thing with the Torah. We didn't create ourselves. We didn't design ourselves. God designed us. So he gave us an owner's manual to the world. Right? I designed you to eat this and not to eat that. If you're Jewish, these things. If you're not Jewish, different things. I designed you to wear this and not wear that. Think this and not think that. Say this and not say that. Work now, not work now. Eat chametz now, but not eat chametz now. That's how you're designed. You can do what you want, but you may be burning out your motor. You can do what you want with your car, too. You could put water in the gas tank. It's not going to go anywhere. It wasn't designed to run on water, unfortunately. Right? But if you use the wrong grade of gas, the car may even look like it's going, but eventually you're going to burn out the motor. So you can do what you want in this world, but you should realize that you are bound to the design of the designer, and if you don't follow the design of the designer, you may be burning out your motor and never get to where you're supposed to go. So the Torah is the owner's manual to the world. If that's the case, then the more important human life is, or Jewish life is specifically, the more important the Torah is. Because when you buy a pack of gum or a box of tissues, it does not come with even one page of directions how to use it. How to chew the gum properly, or how to, what's it called, blow your nose properly. Why not? Because it's not worth it. It would cost more to print the page than to buy another thing of what's it called, of tissues. You use it wrongly, buy another one. You chew the gum wrong, buy another one. But a car, right, you can't just buy another one if you ruin it. So the more important the item, the more important the instructions are for how to use it. If human life is important, then the Torah is important. The less human life is important, the less the Torah is important. And therefore, right before the Torah was given, the Rabban Shem wanted the Jewish people to hear again how important they were in his eyes. That if anybody would come and touch the mountain, right, even a sinner, his death, right, since he would have to be executed, his death would be considered like the death of a multitude of people. Why? Because every person is important, because without him, the multitudes can't have perfection either. You need his part as much as anybody else's part. And therefore, we say that everybody's part is important. It says that Moshe and Aaron were equally important. L'chor Moshe was much more important than Aaron. But their function, their role was equally important. Because if Moshe's role was missing, then Aaron wouldn't have been able to accomplish anything. And if Aaron's role was missing, Moshe would not be able. So even though one was intrinsically more important than the other, but vis-a-vis their role in towards the perfection of their mission, they were equally important. Right? The spark plugs don't cost as much as the carburetor, but they're equally important, because if you're missing the spark plugs, the carburetor is useless. And if you're missing the carburetor, the spark plugs are useless. So therefore, right before the Torah was given, the Rabban Shem wanted the Jewish people to know how important they were in his eyes. That even one person would be considered, the loss of one person would be considered like the loss of a multitude. And that way they would appreciate the Torah. Because the Torah is the guidebook and the owner's manual for Jewish life, or for human life, right? For the entire universe. The universe is not important, and if people aren't important, then what's the Torah important? But the more important people are, the more important the Torah is. And lastly, it says, as a preface to the giving of the Torah, the parsha of Yisro, the Yishma Yisro, Yisro heard. So the Rashi brings down the Chazal, Mashmua Shoma Uba. What did he hear that gave him the incentive to come and join the Jewish people? So the question, and Rashi says, two things. Milchrias Yamsuf, he heard about the splitting of the sea, and Milchemes Amalek, and the war with Amalek. They all ask, it says in the Pasuk that he heard everything. Yishma Yisro, Yishkol Asher Osa, everything that God did from the Exodus from Egypt or whatever. So why does it pick out those two things? And what's the question? What did he hear? It says in the Pasuk what he heard, everything. So why did Chazal ask again, what did he hear, and give an answer, these two things? I think the answer is, Mashmua Shama Uba. What necessitated him to come and join the Jewish people? He could have heard all these things and become a believing person in Midian. He didn't have to come and join the Jewish people. What gave him the necessity, the incentive to come and join the Jewish people? From all the things he heard, right, he could have stayed in Midian and become a believer. Why'd he have to join the Jewish people? Why'd he have to come? That was the thing. Mashmua Shama Uba. What gravitated him to come and join the Jewish people? Why couldn't you stay in Midian and be a believer? So that's what it says. He heard two things. He heard Kriyas Yamsuf, and he heard Milchemes Amalek. What was special about both of those things? He heard that by Kriyas Yamsuf, Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jewish people, right, Hashem Yilochem Lochem V'Atem Tacharishu. God will fight for you, and you keep quiet. Okay? So Yisro said, I see. When there's danger from enemies, God does the fighting, and the Jewish people are quiet, they pray, they just sit still, and God takes care. Okay, next thing he hears, a few days later, there's a war of Amalek. Oh, he said, oh, I know what's going to be. God is going to fight their battles, and they're going to keep quiet. And here he hears, no, God tells Moshe to, what's it called, to go out and fight with Amalek, tell Yoshua to pick people and go out and fight with Amalek. He says, what in the world's going on over here? I thought God does the fighting. Here God says, you do the fighting. So what do you see from that? Every situation is different. When it came to Kriyas Yamsuf, to fighting the Egyptians, there God said, I'll do the fighting, you sit still. Why? There's many reasons. One is because they owed the Egyptians a debt of gratitude for being in their country for 210 years. And God didn't want them to fight against them, just like Moshe Rabbeinu didn't hit the what's it called? What?
Hakar
Satov. Right, Hakar Satov. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu didn't hit the earth and the Nile or whatever. So that's one reason. There are many other reasons also, right? Because when it's physical danger, God God fights. Right? When people are in spiritual danger, like Amalek, then they have to do the fighting. In any case, there are reasons. But Yisrael said, I can't stay where I am and assume that I know what God's will is, because it changes according to the situation. Therefore, I have to be around Moshe Rabbeinu and the Gedolim, right, in Klal Yisrael, to know what applies in this situation, what applies in that situation. We find the same lesson before the Torah was given. It says, "Bayom hazeh bo midbar Sinai." They came to Midbar Sinai on this day, not that day, but this day. And therefore we learn from that, "Bechol yom yubi kachadoshim kilu hayom nitnu." Every day they should be in your eyes like they're new, like they were given today. There's only one problem. That seems to imply that the Torah should always be new and fresh, as if it was given that day, just like it says over there, on this day they came to Midbar Sinai, this day, not that day. Every day should be like this day you came to Midbar Sinai. The only problem is they didn't get the Torah on that day. They didn't get the Torah until 7 days later, or 6 days later, according to different opinions. So what do you tell me? It was a process. It started on the first day of Sivan, and it ended on the seventh or sixth day of Sivan. And that whole process is called receiving the Torah. It's not true. Because the rabbis say that nothing happened on that day. Rosh Chodesh, Sivan, Moshe didn't say a word to the people. God didn't say a word to Moshe. He let them rest. He saw that they were tired from traveling, and he let them rest that day. The next day started the process of giving the Torah. So how in the world can we learn from the fact that the Torah says on this day they came to Midbar Sinai, which is Rosh Chodesh Sivan, every day should be new to you like the Torah was given that day, if the Torah wasn't given that day at all? Therefore, I wanted to say it means something different. God had waited for this moment of the Jewish people being the right number, in the right place, right, at the right time, to give the Torah. He wanted to give the Torah before the world was created. But it needed to be given to a certain people at a certain time with a certain number. Now they're in the right place at the right time and the right number. And you would think that God would want to hurry up and start giving him the Torah. But he assesses the situation. He sees they're tired. And it would be counterproductive to start with them today. Let them rest today. Tomorrow we'll start. That's what it says. Every day you have to reassess your relationship to the Torah based on the conditions of the day. And just because yesterday you did it like this doesn't mean today you do it like this, because the circumstances may have changed. Just like God assessed the circumstances from new and decided not to give the Torah, not to start the process that day because they were tired, the same thing goes with every single person. Every day the Torah should be new to you, that you should reassess your relationship to it according to the conditions. Some days you have to jump out of bed and do extra effort to do whatever. And some days, no. That it would be counterproductive to do that. You're tired, rest today. Tomorrow you'll be able to do better. So every day, every situation in life, every stage in life, the way that a person related to the Torah when he's young is not the same way when he's older. Different circumstances. The same way you relate to the Torah in one place is not the same way you relate to it in a different place. Different circumstances. Maybe the circumstances are different. Right? What is okay in one place is not okay in a different place, because maybe it has implications, right, in that other place that doesn't have in the first place. Well, the example I like to give in Eretz Yisrael, right, They use Christmas lights for sukkah decorations, right? Maybe here it's okay. There's no Christmas. There's no goy. There's no Christians. There's only Muslims, so it doesn't mean anything. But if you use those same decorations in America, it means something. So you have to be sensitive to know the conditions, the circumstances, to know how to relate to the Torah. Doesn't change, but your relationship to it changes according to the circumstances. So, putting all these things together, we have, on the one hand, the idea that every individual is important, because perfection can only be reached when every person contributes his part. If that's the case, then we know the importance of even an individual is the importance of the whole klal, because if one individual is missing, the klal can't function. It can't be perfect. If the spark plugs are missing, the car is useless. So even though the rest of the car is a lot more expensive than the smart plugs are very, very important. They're just as important as the rest of the car. And because of that, you have to be sensitive to the differences. There are many, many different components in this world, and a person has to be sensitive also to the different components that he has. Some days like this, some days like that, some places like this, some places like that. Everything is different. Everything needs to be assessed according to its unique characteristics or whatever. And you can't relate to the Torah the same every day, every place, every person. Everyone is unique. Those three lessons go together, and that is part of the lessons in order to enable the real Kabbalah Satorah.
Are we talking about this real Kabbalah Satorah besides, like Yisro, yeah, he accepted the Torah, but
No, we have, the Torah is being given every single day. A person has to accept it as new. A person gets up in the morning, right? He has a responsibility to accept upon himself the yoke of Torah for that day. Mm-hmm. And so it's an ongoing thing, the Kabbalah Satorah.